Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I have a brother from another mother in the house. We have so many connections, we couldn't even get this podcast started. James Ammo Amorosi, welcome to the Playbook.
Pleasure to be here, Dave. I've been wanting to come see you for I don't know how long. You know, I've heard such wonderful things, and it's such a pleasure.
And vice versa. And everything happens at the right time for the right reason, which is why I want to start, because we're both old enough now. We paid the dummy tax. So we're working in legacy and very similar spaces, utilizing sports and entertainment, utilizing our passions with the ability to do three things, which you may or may not know. My mission is to teach people how to make a lot of money, help a lot of people, and have a lot of fun. And that was part of the problem of getting started on this podcast. We probably have enough content without the podcast because we sat here for so long talking. When I talk about your legacy fund, is it aligned with making a lot of money, helping a lot of people, and having a lot of fun?
1,000%. You know, when I spoke to Darren about it, I said, Darren Prince, famous
sports agent, Magic Johnson, my Goggins, everybody.
Whole thing.
My boy, your boy.
The legend. He, you know.
We just say Darren because we figure everybody knows.
Yeah, I do that all the time. he's really, you know, 28 years of friends. You know, he's a spiritual brother, one of my best friends, and a phenomenal business partner. And more importantly, a beautiful human being.
Yeah.
And when I, you know, I came out of a hedge fund, I had an exit, and I said to him, you know, I want to do something different. I said, I don't want the same old thing. I don't want to just focus on money and, you know, every day, how was your, you know, the last deal, the last trade, you know. Yeah. I said, I want to do something fun. I said, here is, and he and I have been trying to do something for 28 years, right? Going way back to Livingston, to Hawaii. I said, here is the recipe of what I want for this fund. Go find me the ingredients. And I'll tell you a great story. It was a Sunday. I just got out of the shower. We were talking on the phone, and he goes, Ammo. I said, what I wanted was an ex-professional athlete who was still in the game and still relevant in the trenches with the players. He goes, I got it. I'm calling him now. I go, who are you calling? He goes, Neek. I go, Neek. I go, as in the Dominique, the human highlight reel. He goes, yeah. I go, F you, you're calling him now. I need 2 weeks to prep for that conversation.
Yeah.
He goes, Ammo, hold on. He called him right there. Okay. I mean, I was having a heart attack, and he got him on the phone, and we closed the deal right there with Neek. We talked for about an hour. It was done. And you know, he did the same thing with my other partner, Kevin Harrington, the original OG Shark, right?
Oh, he's a good friend of mine as well. No surprise.
Of course, right? No surprise. But, you know, I said to him, I go, Darren, this is different. We want to have a serious process of acquiring companies, right? Making investments. We want to have a tremendous impact on the companies that we acquire. They have to have a positive influence and impact on the communities, societies, the world. I said, and third, I want to have a friggin' blast doing it. Because, you know, I said, at this point, I don't have to do anything. I'm doing it for fun. So he put together this list. And, man, let me tell you, you know, we did the philanthropic piece, you know, we were chatting about before we went on air. You know, it is been such a blessing and so much fun. And, you know, like, you and I have been doing things for a long time, right? Yeah. Decades. Sometimes it gets old. I tell you, I'm like a kid in a candy store.
You feel that.
It's like a renewed, you know, vigor to go out and just make things happen.
You know? And you mentioned making things happen. One of the things that we've learned, especially in the space of, and the Legacy Fund, of helping individuals who have availability and access to all the help in the world, that somehow, including myself back in 2008, manage to lose everything. Because, and it's not the access to the right individuals, because they're out there. It's one, picking the right individuals, but two, not being apathetic. Because even if you have the right individuals around us, I believe that the simple things to do are simple not to do. And that some of the most disciplined, consistent, persistent individuals that I've worked with, they are not managed and developed correctly for a legacy, the way they were managed and developed to perform at the highest level day to day. I know from experience with you and your fund that I see that as the secret ingredient why Darren has attracted you for almost 3 decades, why I was begging you to come into my studio, because you understand the management and development of the individuals more than managing the money.
You said a mouthful. And again, pearls of wisdom, right? What you just said. How many, you know, I'm a researcher, so I'm an economist by education and an analyst by trade, right? I analyze everything. I'm a math guy. So, you know,
me too, by the way.
Are you?
More in common. We're going to be here forever.
Yeah, this is going to be all right. You know, I analyzed when Dominique came in, I go, Neat, this is really about bringing athletes who reach the highest echelon, who grew up like you and I did. Me and Neat grew up very similar.
Right.
I grew up in Newark, New Jersey. It's like Brooklyn. Poor.
Bergen, you know, County.
Yeah, no money, right? Right. Yeah, no money, you know.
You go to Patterson if you don't know what I'm talking about.
Exactly. It's tough neighborhood. It's the hood. And Neek grew up the same way. And I said, you know, Neek, I've researched this. And you know, the math tells me that 90% of professional football players experience economic hardship or go broke within 2 years. This is before the guaranteed money,
yep.
Right? Just recently occurred, which, God, thank God. And then I said, for professional baseball and basketball players, within 4 to 7 years, 75% experience economic hardship. I said, it's really one reason. They're not mentored properly. They haven't changed their mindset, because it's a mindset. They still have the same mindset they did. And we use, the whole thing, the thesis was to get Neek on board was Allen Iverson.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And
the original AI.
He is, man. Let me tell you, I don't know him personally, but I was always a fan. And the beauty of it, I'm still waiting for Darren to tell me who his business manager was, because I want to give the guy a hug and a kiss, even though I don't know. He did the right thing. He deferred $37 million.
Right.
Now, back then, he made close to $250 million when nobody was. MJ, nobody. Magic, none of them were making that. And he winded up experience that economic
hardship. Suits are expensive.
Exactly. They don't change the mindset, right?
Yeah.
So the whole thing was, that's how we kind of, you know, phase two, the second fork to this, the second prong was, you know, financial literacy and teaching people structure. You know, wealthy people are wealthy because they do the same thing over and over again, like a martial artist would, like doing a kata or a form. You do the same thing until you get it perfect, and then you just rinse and repeat. And a lot of those guys you were talking about, those athletes, celebs, they don't know that. You know, they get thrown into the limelight, and that piece is missed. And that's why the DWFL, Dominique Wilkins, it was born. You know what I mean?
So smart. And it's interesting because Tiger Woods comes to mind in one statement that he made to me. I said, I've known Tiger since he was young.
That's awesome.
Before he won his first tournament. Phil Mickelson was also a neighbor of mine when he was 14. I played golf with him. Four doors down, his sister was my prom date to my high school, where Jeff Fenster and Dan Fleischman went.
I love it.
Right, same cities. But Tiger Woods, I said, man, what makes you so amazing that people don't see is your skills and your knowledge of golf are your basement. And your basement, like LeBron James, is higher than my delta will ever take me in those sports. I said, but the difference that you, LeBron, and others have, and Neek as well, I call him Dom, but is that you guys don't practice till you get it perfect. You practice until you don't get it wrong.
Pearl of wisdom.
And that is different. And I see this mindset, a paradigm shift, that a lot of these guys are used to practicing till they get the shot right, instead of practicing until they don't get it wrong. You're not shooting anymore, and what I see you do for so many great athletes, entertainers, and just high net worth individuals, because it's still applicable, because that's all. I was a below average college football player, so you wouldn't even call me an athlete. And if I brought it up in front of some of my Hall of Famers, they look over like, shut up, Dave, don't talk football, but talk business to us. In that respect, there is ego involved, that when we are successful in making money, at the time we're making it, we are not humble. My favorite quote, and you can steal it, Ammo, because you got to tell the guys when they come to you, you're either humble or you're about to be.
Amen, brother. And he will take care of it. He will humble the best of us, right?
Always.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I remember when I came from no money. So when I came back from Japan, after I fought professionally, I didn't have that down phase that they have where that no more dopamine rush. I went right into trading, which is fighting without fighting, right? It's fighting without hitting somebody. So I always had that high. But I can tell you, I remember when I started making some money. I never had it. I started making money. Boy, did it go to my head.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was
too.
I was their shit. Like, I'm like, you know what? I'm the king. I got this car. I got this place. I had a place here. I had a place in the city. I had a jersey. I had everywhere, right?
I can go out to eat. I can stay in a hotel room. That was the level of mine. Yeah. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I never have to work again.
You're like a kid to candy store, yeah. Right? You never had these things. Now you want them, right? But I remember getting humbled, you know, in trading, where I've lost everything.
Yeah.
In my younger days. Like, I lost. I was, like, riding high. And I just got humbled, and I sat back and I went, you know what? You forgot every principle you were taught in martial arts. Put your ego aside. Because in the grand scheme of things, in this universe, we're just a little grain of sand. And that lesson, the pain, was always the best. That's when I learned when not to trade. How not to shoot, right? When not to trade. I was over trading. And it's to your point where these guys are not, they're not out there. They're trying to perfect the shot instead of trying to perfect how not to make a mistake when you shoot.
Or right? When not to shoot.
When
right?
Not to shoot.
Yeah, take the bad shot.
100%.
And that's definitely in trading. Now, you brought up a point that I was going to bring, and I'm trying to beat a mark that my boy Jeff Fenster had, which is he asked you a question no one's ever asked you. So I'm trying to get there. In that respect, pain. I have studied, I'm a researcher as well. I started my career with Westlaw, Legal Research Online. That's how I made my millions to start.
Love it.
I believe in being more interested than interesting. My code line after every show. But pain is interesting because one of the things I've learned about MMA, UFC, martial artists is that they have a relationship with pain. And so I would love to get some insight, not just on pain, and how you perceive pain in life, but something different, struggle. A lot of people don't realize that everyone has to have a relationship with pain, but a lot of people don't go a step farther and create a relationship with the reaction to pain, which is promotion, perfection, love, and perfection for me, not struggle or punishment. How do you have a relationship, number one, with pain, but more importantly, with struggle?
Again, a first, baby. You got it. No one's ever asked
all
me
right.
That. And I love those
take that,
questions.
Finster.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I think your mentor might have upped you on that one. That's a phenomenal question. It's something that I, you know, it's interesting to be asked that question because I've had many, many intimate conversations with myself about pain and struggle, right? And it's almost something that you don't talk about. It's almost like taboo, or it's somewhat embarrassing. For me, it was as a young man. You know, when I trained, I trained in a style called Kyokushinkai, full contact bare knuckle fighting, brutal.
Yeah,
you couldn't punch in the face, but you kicked at the head. It was crazy, but the training was so extreme. When I say extreme, it was worse than military. Like it was like I knew I was above. Like a
David
Marine.
Goggins.
No disrespect to
like
Marines.
David Goggins.
Yeah, yeah, like that level. Yeah. That's what we did, right?
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. I mean, I don't even want to tell the audience what I did to myself to condition myself. But I realized that, you know, I would train. I would get so fatigued, so tired, and I would fight through it. And I, at one point, when I became mature enough to realize this, that I had this relationship with pain. And I realized that I couldn't fight it. I had to embrace it rather than oppose it, that pain and that struggle. And for me, what that has morphed into is when I struggle with something and I find relationships, you know, can be a struggle at times, right? marriages, you know, your partner. You know,
I love that people always use that one when you talk about being in struggle. I've been married 27 years of my dream girl. And I'm like, what do people do with a shitty wife? Because, you know, it's like kids. I'm like, what do people do with bad kids? Because my wife and kids are phenomenal, but I struggle.
Struggle, right? Nonetheless. That's a blessing, by the way, to have it, because I've been there in a prior marriage and life. But, you know, the struggles, what I do, I try to think about, you know, if it's an opposing position with a person, you know, something that Darren said the other day when we were having one of these podcasts or so, he said, come from a position of understanding rather than being understood.
Right.
And, you know, it's
so good.
To your point, what you said earlier.
That's how I got along with my dad. I stopped trying to change him.
Same thing.
Right? I just wanted to understand him.
Yeah. And when you
Because when you try to come from being understood, you're trying to change somebody.
And that, I learned, was the curse. The empathy that lies within me trying to change people, I realized I have to change. It's not them. So that struggle.
Smart.
Oftentimes, I'll sit back and say, what am I really trying to achieve here? You know, and it could be a struggle with myself, right? You know, when I was rolling out of the hedge funds, I was struggling what to do next. You know, how am I going to reinvent myself? I don't want to do the same thing again. You know, and I said, you know what? You know, what is your objective? You know, you're struggling with these certain things, you know, and I think when you get to a certain point financially, you know, money's irrelevant.
Absolutely.
It's
an energy.
It almost becomes, and it could be an energy suck too, right?
Always.
As you know. And I said, you know, I want to do something that doesn't, it's not focused. It's focused on money, but that's not the objective. It's not the only objective. And I feel like, you know, rolling with accepting the moment, accepting the struggle, focusing on what my objective is, and am I really creating this problem for myself that doesn't exist? Because oftentimes we do that. So
smart. There's a lot of nuggets there. To finish up, talking about energy, I study the Tao, the Tao Te Ching.
Yeah.
Obviously, most martial art experts like yourself have the least familiarity with the 81 verses of the Tao and the way and lighting the way.
1,000%.
It's interesting how many people that are athletes and even celebrities and entertainers, in their practice of their profession, they utilize the Tao in order to be successful.
I love that.
But where I see your fund, the Legacy Fund, is that you not only are able and capable of understanding celebrities, athletes, entertainers, billionaires, millionaires, and entrepreneurs in the physicality of the Tao, but you've transcended from your martial art experience and expertise it into the life, the lifestyle, and the passion in a reconciliation with the Tao, it seems like, as a framework of understanding where energy flows, so it goes, that you stay low and allow everything to flow to you. How much has that helped you, not with being a martial art expert or being a successful business person, but able to live in both spaces to help other people transcend what they've done on the court and on the field and in their bank accounts into a lifestyle or a passion that provides purpose and still profitability?
Another great question. I mean, you know, I started reading diligently between the ages of 11 and 14. I have 1,500 martial arts books in my library. Just my that.
I didn't even know there was that many.
There is.
I got them. Pre-social. Everybody can write a book now.
Yeah. Right? But crazy.
You were 11.
I was so intrigued by that. Like, I have a book called The Sound of One Hand.
Ooh.
I got to send you a copy.
Yeah, I want a copy.
That is, like, just think of that. The title, The Sound of One Hand. I would read all these things. And I was so fascinated as a kid. I read all the great religions. I wanted to know why we were here, you know?
Yeah.
Like you. So you're definitely a brother from another mother. And, you know, for me, all that knowledge I gained that I was seeking as a young man to try to understand all these things, you know, as you get older, a decade goes by, every decade, you realize the things that you've learned in the past, especially the expression, the older I get, the smarter my parents become.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you talk to my kids.
I will.
Wait, I have
as long as you talk to mine.
I will. Let me give you the nugget of being a parent real quick. I'm not going to lose your train of
That's
thought.
All right.
Am I ready?
Please.
Three stages of being a parent: idolization, demonization, and humanization.
Isn't that amazing?
I'm getting to humanization.
I love that. I love that. That is awesome. You know, I have my son is 18, and that's a whole nother conversation for another day.
Yeah.
Tough. And then I have with Erica, the one I'm with now, her three children who are like my children. And, you know, I could see it, especially being able to look from a little bit from the lens of an outsider looking in.
Yeah.
And that is, those nuggets that you just dropped are so powerful. You know, because nobody gives you a playbook on how to be a parent.
No.
You got to go out there.
You don't even need a license.
They should give you one. We should go to school for that.
You need one to fish, but not to have a kid.
You think about
Welcome
it.
Welcome to America.
Welcome to America. But, you know, amen to what you said. I mean, that alone is worth $1 million. That advice, that the phases you just said, because it's so true, right?
Yeah.
Humanization. You know, I had a very contentious relationship with my father.
Me too.
Growing up.
Me too. Here we go.
Never good enough.
Right.
You know,
I never said I love you, I'm proud of you, or I have your back.
That's funny.
And I say it every day to my kids.
That to me, I have papers from when I was a kid. I used to write letters to my father. I love you, because I knew he couldn't say it. I knew he loved me.
Yeah.
I knew he would die for me.
Me too.
But hearing words is so powerful. And you know, it bothered me. I struggled with that. And I still do. Like, you know, my mother is 89. God bless her, right? She still has a hard time saying, I love you.
Oh.
I'm like, Ma, you're from the greatest generation ever. You know, the Depression era. You've gone through wars, Holocaust. I mean, everything. Holocaust.
Depression.
Yeah, depressions. And saying, I love you. So when I had my son, I used him as a vehicle to start saying, I love you. Tell Nanny you love her.
Yeah.
I love you, Nan. I would
love
say
that.
But you know, it's a powerful thing that you said about that. So I'll circle back to the question.
To the
right?
Big close, yeah.
To the question.
The Tao.
The Tao, which I love. I love that spirituality that you have. You know, to flow in life, to me, I just had a conversation with someone earlier today about, you know, how I try to, I'm an artist. I'm not a finance guy. I'm a human being, but I'm an artist. And life is my canvas, right? And I try to live my lifestyle according to the my two P's. You live by your principles, you're guided by your principles, and you're driven by your purpose, right? And my principles are sound. They're sound in tradition, modern things, family, friends, ethics, etiquette.
Health
is primary, the first.
Yep.
Health is first.
Yep.
Without health is wealth, right? Without health, we have nothing. And to find a flow, like coming here today and meeting you I met you prior, but for the second time, but having such a flow, like meeting you, feeling so at home, like you're a brother, you know, to me, those are the moments that are meaningful. So you meet an athlete, right? Who I can relate to. I can relate to athletes, what they go through. And you start to edify what they've done, but you modify their behavior by not forcing it upon them, but guiding them by the way you live and the way you speak. So many people don't know about guys like, not guys like you, because you're the king. Seriously, I mean, you know everybody, but people who know you or get to know you don't realize all the things that you know, the wisdom. And you start sharing that with somebody, you change them. And more so than stardom and fame.
For sure.
Right? And when you can teach someone who reaches that level of success, that echelon, like a professional athlete who's a baller, and you can talk to them like a human being and remind them that they're a human being and they have to be humble, I feel like the Tao is working through you. You're a vehicle that is being used by the universe to humble people, to make them remember where they came from, and to teach them that you want to build your foundation on, you know, granite, not sand. And I try to teach these guys that you know, all the time you put into your game, you know, that energy you put in, that effort, the time, you have to do the same thing with your finances, with your marriage, with your children. You don't want to be great at one thing. You don't want to be this baller who just everybody.
Harmony.
Harmony is being a great. For me, I had some great mentors as parents. And I said when my kid, my first kid was born, I am going to be the best father ever, ever. I'm going to love that kid like next level. But I'm going to have standards and expect. So I feel like when you teach these people how to be a human and how to be have humility and be the best at being a father, being a husband, being a wife, being a partner, being a business partner, being a friend first. All my business partners are my friends. I won't do business with someone unless I have to love them as a person. You know, it mitigates so much risk.
Of course.
So I feel like when you become in harmony and balanced, yin and the yang, and you start flowing, and people feel your energy, you start vibrating at a higher frequency, and you will take your game, meaning your life, professionally, mentally, spiritually, physically, monetarily, to a whole nother level, and be at peace, and be happy, and not in pursuit of money, in pursuit of perfection of life, and you're being guided by your principles and being propelled by your purpose. You know, I love your purpose, by the way. Love it, man.
A definite purpose, which is why I became the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute, to help facilitate the legacy, but also the community of people that want to help each other, that know people that can help each other, and to know now that you're one of my newest neighbors, along with some of the young gentlemen that you're working with, and especially Darren Prince, a big shout out to you, because we wouldn't be together but for one of those seeds.
Shout out to you, Baba.
Absolutely. James Ammo Amorosi. If you want to plant seeds under trees that you may never sit under, then find a mentor that's sitting in the situation you want to be in, like my man Ammo. Be strong, be happy, be healthy and wealthy. Let's figure out what we're doing to interfere with it. This is David Meltzer with Ammo here on Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.